Welcome once again to the 2015 Homelessness Radio Marathon, hosted this year by CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. It's around 6 o'clock in the morning on Thursday, February 26th, and we're in the final hour of our 15-hour broadcast with 14 contributing stations from 6 provinces. Previously, we heard from CKMS in Waterloo, Ontario, and before that, we heard a 90-minute segment produced by Gennargi O'Sullivan from Vancouver Co-op Radio. We're bringing things home to Kingston for the final hour of our broadcast with a documentary, an hour-long documentary, produced at CFRC, and it's entitled Beyond Closed Doors, an exploration of youth and hidden homelessness in Kingston, Ontario. The protagonist of the story is a young woman who became homeless at the age of 16, and we'll also hear from service providers, one of whom has also experienced homelessness herself.
I was left out on Highway 15 with a suitcase and a backpack, and I called one of my best friends, and she picked me up with her mom, and I lived with them for quite a while, and it got to the point where they couldn't afford it anymore. So I had to leave, and I had nowhere to go, so I went to the shelter. I still feel too young. There's a lot of days where I sit there, and I'm like, I just turned 17, I'm living on my own, like, I have to be responsible for my own food, my own everything. Like, I think no matter, even if you're coming from, you know, a family who can pay for university, it's still hard to be 17 and living on your own. It is probably one of the hardest things.
The theory in Kingston is for a lot of people, they can solve their own homelessness. Easy for you to say when you're not homeless. For me, I was homeless with 4 children at one time. And so I know what it's like, and sometimes you need people who are going to help you through. You need the supports in place, right? There needs to be some focus on those people who need less resources for a shorter period of time to reduce the real homelessness and not just the chronic homelessness.
When you're exposed to the shelter system at a young age and you get access to that lifestyle, maybe get exposed to addictions, get exposed to a variety of things, then that becomes kind of your normal, right? So when you become an adult, that's normal for you because you've been exposed to it at a young age.
So we can point it at, you know, marijuana use or alcohol use or skipping classes. But the reality is that that's typical teenage behavior. How many of us, when we were 16, when we were 17, 18, skipped a class? I'm betting most people probably have tried alcohol before they were 19 and legally able to do so. And so these are things that we sometimes forget are typical amongst the whole teenage population and not necessarily any higher amongst homeless youth. It just seems like an easy way to try and explain youth homelessness, but you know, it doesn't. A lot of people in high school would think, well, I never went to school with a homeless person, when in actual fact, most people have, they just didn't know it.
Welcome to Beyond Closed Doors, a special program on homelessness in Kingston made possible by the Robert H. Black Documentary Residency. This program was produced at CFRC 101.9 FM, Queen's University's campus and community radio station in Kingston, Ontario. My name is Brenna, and in the past several months, I have spoken to members of the Kingston community who are experiencing homelessness and to service providers working in the area. The first voice you heard is that of a really quite remarkable young woman who I call Emily. In the course of this program, Emily will share her experiences with homelessness, from struggling to attend school while worrying about a place to stay at night or having enough to eat, to drug use and to forging new support networks when relying on parents and guardians isn't an option. We'll also hear from Tara Everett, Youth Services Supervisor at Homebase Housing, from Connie Schwartz, Executive Director at Ryandale Shelter, and Jason Bobia, Executive Director at Kingston Youth Shelter. This is Beyond Closed Doors.
I recently learned my dad had post-traumatic stress disorder after being in Afghanistan, and that was one of the reasons why we argued a lot, and I got kicked out, actually, ironically, this time last year on Family Day. You know, because I grew up, you know, with parents who were well off and things like that, like, I never really knew, like, my parents were never into heavy drugs, they were always there for me. Like, if I was sick, they would take the day off and take care of me when I was younger, and then as I got older, that kind of changed. But I think it's different just because I was never really expecting to be homeless, I guess, you know? So when my street smarts were not good. Like, I'm good in school, but when it comes to everything else, I wasn't really. These kids who have parents that maybe have come from different backgrounds, like low income and whatnot, like, they kind of know their way around, you know, this kind of life, but I had no clue. Like, I just kind of had to, I made a lot of friends, and, like, they helped me a lot along the way. Like, one of my really good friends, actually, I met him. He lives with me. He's like a brother to me now. Like, he's older, and, like, he comes from a completely different, like, you know, background, and we've bonded. Like, he's like my brother, and he's helped me through a lot. So I think, you know, just meeting people and not placing judgments on them. Like, I know a lot of people who, you know, come from these, like, privileged families, and they're like, oh, like, I'm never gonna talk to that person, they look sketchy and all this stuff. And, you know, like, you look at someone and you underestimate them completely, because I've met a lot of people who have the intelligence to go to school and get on with their life, but they can't because of where they come from. And I think that's really unfair, so.
I think that we have a huge amount of homeless youth here in Kingston, but they're not necessarily always staying at the shelters. They're couch surfing. A lot of times, I'm sure any homeless individual, but especially with youth, if they're not actually on the street, they don't consider themselves homeless, right? But they might not have a permanent address. They might be hopping from one friend to another friend. So I do believe that there is a huge youth homeless population here. Even with our program, we can house 29 youth, and we have about 50 young people on our wait list. It's hard to say when you ask who uses our service, because the youth that use our service come from everywhere. So you wouldn't, it's not like you're gonna know a homeless youth from a youth that's not homeless. And sometimes our young people have, you know, just have family breakdown and ongoing conflict at home, their family breaks down, and it's just best to kind of leave that situation. And so they could be young people coming from that environment, young people coming from the actual shelter, couch surfing, coming from custody facilities, anywhere really. We have a lot of young people also that might have grown up in care of Children's Aid. So, you know, not having those natural supports for young people is a huge barrier. So our, you know, goal is to reduce those barriers and have access to, you know, a healthier kind of lifestyle and get those supports, whether it be addictions or mental health, but be able to access those supports in a supportive environment.
since I've been here, which I started in April, people who their house burned and there's no insurance, and so what do? Oh, and then what happens after they can't get to work because their house burnt down? They lose their job. This was an example, and it's true. I mean, how much worse can life get? You lose your house, and then you lose your job, and then, you know, is the dog next? I don't know. But anyways, and he was here for a short period of time. He got back on his feet. He started working. I talked to him recently, and he's got a promotion where he's working, and he actually bought a new truck and that kind of thing. We've had people in our shelter here who were making $90,000 a year as, you know, a logistics or warehousing or whatever industry they happen to be in. And the wheels fell off of their life. The marriage broke up. He had, you know, all of the legal costs and everything else. He lost everything, and ended up in the shelter. We've had people, older folks, being dropped off by their adult children, just dropped off at the door here. I mean, that's like saying you and me have the same shared life experience, and we don't. Everybody's unique. Everybody has a unique story. In October of this past year, 2013, the city did a homeless point-in-time count, and what they were counting were the people who were visibly homeless. And actually, Raising the Roof estimates that only one in five Canadians who are deemed to be homeless are visibly homeless, and that's in the small communities and in the large communities. And why they are hidden homeless, we don't really know. You can't really go knocking on people's doors. The only way that you can actually get a grasp on them is from an entry point into the system. So for a lot of people, that may be the social housing registry because they simply can't afford. But that still doesn't include somebody who's just crashing at somebody's house for you know, a week until they get moved along to the next place. It's a really hard number to calculate because it fluctuates so much. And to me, the hidden homeless is probably the greatest problem that we have, not just in Kingston, but in our country. Because you can't, if you don't know where they are, then you can't help them. The definition of homelessness is more than the number of people on the street. Okay. Secondly, it's assuming that people are going to want to talk about it. They don't want to talk about it. Everybody who participated in a survey, for example, got a little gift bag, which included, it was provided by Tim Hortons, by the United Way, which was really great. A nice little incentive for people to participate. But they got like backpacks or some kind of carry bag or a hat or something like that. And almost none of the people who were working, who were staying here at the shelter, would be caught dead wearing it, because then it would identify them. It's almost like the S for the Scarlet Letter. They didn't want to be identified as homeless. And people don't want to be homeless, and they don't want to be identified as homeless. They have no roof over their head right now. Basically, that's it. And so there were an awful lot of issues around the point in time count. Other communities, perhaps larger communities, maybe they wouldn't have the same sort of issues around being identified. I don't know. But with Kingston being a small community, there's a sort of an ignorance around what people do, what people who are homeless do on a rainy night in Kingston. Because most people who are homeless will find some place to hunker down on a cold, rainy night. If it had been done during the daytime, it may have been a different outcome. Because I believe that there were only 107 people identified as homeless, which is, means that they're visibly homeless. Doesn't include the couch surfing or any of that. But of the 107, if all of the shelters were full, because they were doing the shelters as well, I think 90 or 95% of those people were from the shelters. And so where are all of the other people? We know that there's more than 107 or 8 or whatever it happens to be, people who are homeless, whether that's chronically homeless, because there were well over 800 individual unique users of homeless shelters in last year.
I think that there's a lot of youth who are reluctant to seek shelter services. And the Youth Homelessness Steering Committee that I sit on, we've conducted 2 counts now, and the numbers haven't been released from the most recent one. It only occurred a couple weeks ago. But when we look at 2013, when that count was conducted, they found that there was 29 youth who were living within the shelter system on the night of March 5th. But what they also found in talking to adolescent care workers and other agencies that work with youth is that there were up to about 64 that were couch surfing or living with extended family members for short-term periods, places that weren't home, but equally they weren't within the shelter services either. Because again, you think of shelter and you think of all the stereotypes and negative stigmas that come along with that. And many youth are just reluctant, if for no other reason than they're scared, to seek out those services. And so they just continue to couch surf at friends' places and just kind of have that nomadic period of life before inevitably, you know, hopefully they find that kind of support that'll get them somewhere, you know, a little more stable. You have to kind of, as yourself, be strong enough to get past those stereotypes just to seek the help. And then once you're getting the help, you then still have to kind of this barrage of the public who has all these stereotypes of you because you're now living at this place where you're trying to get the help. There are some people who, you know, even after, you know, years and years of us kind of trying to bring youth homelessness to the forefront, there are still some people who do believe that, you know, they have a nice place, it's out in the West End, they could be living there, but they're just choosing to run away. And, you know, while I would certainly not say that that has never occurred, it certainly is incredibly rare. The reality is that this shelter, while it is certainly not a bad place to be, you're sharing a bedroom with 3, 4, 5 other people that you don't know. There's one bathroom and one shower for the guys, one bathroom, one shower for the girls. And so every morning you're in a lineup of what might be 7 or 8 people to be able to get in that shower. If you're lucky, there's still hot water in the morning. So you might be having to come back later on to have your shower later that day. It's not convenient. While people are here, they're still having to do a chore each night. We have a curfew they have to follow. And so it's all the same kind of expectations that they would have while they were at home, except you have all these inconveniences that go along with it. So it logically doesn't make sense that somebody would choose not to be at home and instead choose to be here living in a shelter where you have all the same expectations with none of the same indulgences and convenience. It just doesn't make sense.
I don't really tend to tell people about my background. Like, I tell them I don't live at home, and that kind of raises some suspicions, but no one really ever asks. So it's kind of like the don't ask, don't tell, where, you know, I'm not going to go up to people and be like, oh yeah, I was homeless when I was 16, and I slept in an elevator for a couple nights before. Like, it's not like that. I think that I make friends all over. Like, I have friends who are going to Queens. I have friends who, you know, are homeless and who are, you know, still doing a lot of drugs. But I think if you just don't talk about it sometimes, like, if there's no need to talk about it, I don't see why people should judge you on it. They should judge you on your character and not what you've been through. So there's always truth in a stereotype, and a lot of people are like, oh well, you know, homeless people do this and that. And I've run into people, I know that when I was in the shelter, there was this one person who decided to put empty envelopes in the bank to get money, like, you know, things like that. Like, I think that stereotypes come with truth, and not everyone is like that. So I think that, you know, there's always going to be, like, that one person that you can't trust, or that one person that, you know, you can't talk to. But they come everywhere. Like, there's people in all walks of life like that. So I do get why people would be kind of, like, you know, like, antsy. Not
wary.
Antsy. Wary, yeah, exactly. Wary of talking to, or knowing if someone's been homeless or has had, like, you know, a lot of trouble, like, when they were young. But I don't know. In the end, like, if you need to judge someone, like, I try to look for the good in everyone. Like, I think that's one of the biggest things I learned after moving out. Because I was like, you know, I would have been on my way to Queens or on my way to Carleton or something like that if I had the money right now. And I would have never looked at a homeless kid on the street and stopped to talk to them. And now, like, I just know everybody, and it's nice. You know, I was lucky in the fact that I still have a lot of people to support me. Like, I remember in the summer, I had some medical problems, and it wasn't my dad or my stepmom took me to the hospital. It was my friend's parents who took me to the hospital. And I think that's the biggest thing, is that people say that your family will always be there for you, and that's not true. Like, my family has dropped me like that. I needed a police background check recently to volunteer. My mom would not pay for it, and my friend's mom was willing to pay for it. My friend's mom was sitting there going through colleges to see where I could apply just for a year before I go off to university. Like, I think family needs to be someone who's going to look out for you no matter what, and who knows what it's like, you know.
It doesn't have to do with biology.
Yeah, it doesn't have to do with biology at all. Like, you know, like, I love my parents. I think I love my dad. I love him to death, but, you know, like, he tries to be there for me. And, you know, when I was younger, and now it's just the occasional phone call. And, like, they get mad at me if I'm not going to school, and they get mad at me for not doing this and that, but they're not there to do anything. So I'm taking control of my life now. You know, people, like, my parents think that I'm under the impression that I don't need an adult. Like, I'm fine. Like, I'm an adult on my own. It's not like that at all. There's a lot of days where I sit in my room and just cry because I need a parent there for me. And it's, you know, whether you're homeless or whether you come from a family and you've moved away to university, it's the same. Like, I think that's one similarity between everything, is that you can't grow up right away. Like, right after high school, it's not the same. Like, high school and university are not the same at all. So that's one thing for sure. Like, being in university at 17, like, I can't imagine that. That's why I'm taking a year off. Like, I can't do it.
I can't imagine having to, your worries when I was 17, though. Like, I'm astounded at your personal strength, how you've found that.
I think the other thing is my friends. Like, my friends never judge me. Like, one of my friends, actually, her parents are both professors at Queens. You know, like, my friend has teachers at my school. Like, and they all, you know, like, they've all been there for me. They've never been like, oh, well, you know what? Like, I'm not talking to you because I don't trust you around my stuff because you're homeless and you obviously don't have a lot of money. Like, they've been there for me. They, you know, have lent me money when I've needed it. They've, you know, come by the house if I'm having a bad day. Like, I think that that's what I appreciate the most, is that, you know, like, I've got friends who, like, are loyal to me, and I've lost a lot of friends over the years. Like, when I started smoking weed, like, I lost so many friends because I didn't tell them that I was homeless. They just were under the impression that I was just becoming a bad person. And I don't smoke weed anymore. I've stopped that because I can't do it. But that was right after I'd moved out of my friend's cat's house. I had never been homeless before in my life. Like, I was living with, you know, someone's family, and they were taking care of me. And that was the only way to get by, was to just, you know, go to people's houses after school, even before school, and just to get really high so that I wouldn't remember a thing. And it worked. Like, it worked, and I'm not happy about it, because it's like, I could have been so much more productive with my time, but it's been hard. It's been really hard. Like, going to school is a struggle when you've got, you know, like, not a lot of money for food and not a lot of money for clothes. Like, my tights are ripped. Like, I don't have a lot of stuff, and like, it's, when you go to school, like, I try to go to escape there. That's why I'm in radio, so that I, you know, I'm not sitting in a classroom focusing on stuff, because I see all these kids around me getting accepted to university and getting accepted to college and all these things. They're all moving on with their life, and I'm still stuck kind of not knowing what I'm doing, because, you know, they've got families who are helping them pay for this stuff, and I'm stuck on my own, and I kind of was thrust into this so quickly. Like, it's been a year now that I've been on my own, but it's still, like, it takes time getting used to. Like, I haven't, you know, kind of got on my feet yet completely.
As I fell through the clouds like a stone, so I climbed up to the top and jumped off into a land where people are who they are.
I mean, like, my dad's birthday was last week, so I went out to dinner with them, and it was, they confront me on school, they confront me on a lot of stuff. They are under the impression I'm not going anywhere with my life, so it's kind of tough, I suppose, but in the end, it's been working out, so, yeah.
Do you think that's motivated you
more? It has. Like, I don't like to do things for them, but whenever they tell me, like, you're not going anywhere with your life, it's kind of like, I want to show you, you know, that I can do it, and I can, you know, get somewhere despite, you know, not having a lot of moral support. So my parents always used to tell me, like, there was a lot of times where they would just say horrible, horrible things to me, like, you're stupid, you're this, you're that. Like, my parents never hit me. Like, I never came from, like, an abusive household, but it was all, like, psychological. Like, I have a lot of, like, damage from that. Like,
well, is abuse. It's psychological.
I have a horrible guilt complex. Like, if someone, I don't know, like, I'll move that thing of honey over there and I'll say sorry for it because I feel bad about it, like, that kind of thing. And, you know, like, when they would tell me I was naive, I feel like I was naive before I moved out or before I got kicked out because, you know, like, I just took everything for granted. Like, I've never actually had to sit there and be like, I'm really hungry, but I have barely anything to eat. I need to save this for this next meal so I can't finish it. Like, I think, I don't know. It's really hard, and it's almost scary, like, to think about that in your head. Like, since I've been on my own, like, completely, because at the shelter they have food. At Cass House I had food, but, you know, like, living on my own now, I'm probably 10 pounds lighter than I was 2 months ago. Like, it's crazy, and I feel bad about it, but in the end, like, I don't know, I'm still alive. I'm still going to school as much as I can. Like, at this point, like, I'm just trying to, like, keep going. Because one day I will be out of it eventually. Like, I don't want that for my kids. Like, I've learned a lot about that, too, is that the way my parents treated me with all the things they said to me and all the things that they did to me, like, I know now that whenever I have kids, I'm not going to treat them like that, and I'm going to help them. I guess it goes to show that you should never, this sounds really cliche, but you should just never give up on what you want to do, because, you know, like, I know people, like, you know, like, people I live with, like, you know, they're 20, 21, and they want to go back and finish their high school because they want to get a career, they want to do this, and they want to do that, and, you know, like, my dad never went to post-secondary, but he lucked out, like, he got into the military and got a good job, but that's not possible for a lot of people anymore, and, you know, like, I look at my roommates who come from families where their moms were smoking crack in front of them, and they're going to complete their high school education, and they're applying to St. Lawrence, and they want to do something with their life. And, like, I think the biggest misconception about, you know, homeless kids is that we're all the same. Like, we're all drug addicts, we're all this and that, and it's not true. Like, I've gone through rough times with a lot of drugs, and it's been hard, but, you know, like, you pull through it, and you talk to people, and that's, I think, talking to other kids in the same situation is probably the best way to, you know, get through stuff, is because they know what it's like, and they're better than any counselor, because a counselor can sit there and prescribe you medication, or a psychiatrist, and tell you you're doing this wrong and that wrong, but these kids will just tell you, like, you know what, this is what happened when I did this, and you look at it and go, oh, you know what, like, if I keep doing this stuff, like, I'm not going to get anywhere. I want to graduate this year. I was, you know, kicked out of my classes this year because I wasn't attending, because, you know, like, I can't focus in class when I'm hungry and when I'm, you know, cold and all this stuff, and then, like, I want to graduate. Like, I think my biggest goal is just to graduate. So I think, overall, I think just never, you know, think that because you don't have a lot of support that you can't go anywhere. I think just keep trying, I guess, would be the best thing. I don't know. That sounds really cliche, but it's the truth, I guess. That's what I've learned. Well, obviously, I'm in radio a lot. I want to go into, journalism broadcasting, so That's probably my goal. I don't
know. What kind of like radio are you interested in? Music or mostly spoken word?
I like music the most. That's like kind of my thing is I like music, but I'd rather go in more to like the news portion of broadcasting. Yeah. So, but my goal is to go to university and get somewhere. So.
You are listening to Beyond Closed Doors, a special program on hidden and youth homelessness in Kingston, Ontario, produced for the Robert H. Black Documentary Residency. My name is Brenna, and I talk to Jason Bobia, Tara Everett, and Connie Schwartz, who work in the area of homelessness in Kingston, about what the City of Kingston is doing to combat homelessness and how the municipality can improve its strategy. Each of them highlighted the importance of transitional supportive housing for both youth and adults experiencing homelessness. Kingston also has very low vacancy rates, which is prohibitive for many people in terms of both availability and affordability. We'll hear from our guests now. Once again, this is Beyond Closed Doors.
So while we haven't really seen, you know, over the course of the last, again, 8 or 9 years, we haven't seen huge bump in numbers, although there has been a slight gradual increase. What we have seen is a really large increase in people needing longer length of stays, to the point of where, you know, for our average length of stay has almost doubled if you look back to what it was 9 years ago. And it's because people don't have as many options. And so as such, it makes the shelter system appear that it's serving more people, but it's not, it's just serving people for longer. And so as such, people are not moving through the system as quickly as they used to. And so numbers within shelters start to pile up due to longer stays. We recognize the longer, you know, as humans, the longer we do anything, the harder it becomes to not do that thing anymore. And that's the same thing with homelessness, is that the longer someone is kind of stuck within the rut of homelessness, the harder it's then going to be to try and break out of that and to try and make any kind of change. So if we can get people out of kind of the cycle of homelessness before they kind of get used to being homeless, it's a whole lot easier than it is kind of once they accept it as an inevitability. As far as resources go, you know, there's always more that could be done. Kingston has an incredibly low vacancy rate, lowest vacancy rate in Ontario. And as such, to try and find housing, let alone affordable housing, it's an uphill battle for a lot of these people. And so that can be an incredibly difficult thing, especially for those 16, 17 years old, you know, balancing school and all the other stuff that comes along with being a teenager on top of that.
Are there any specific things in Kingston that you'd like to see?
First and foremost, we need more housing. And having a bigger market for housing within Kingston is what's going to bring rents down. Right now in Kingston, we have a landlord's market. With a vacancy rate that hovers at right around 1%, landlords can really charge whatever they want. We're a student town here in Kingston. And so they know that students are coming into Kingston to go to school. You have no choice but to pay whatever they're asking because you don't have alternatives. With more housing, even if it's not necessarily designated affordable housing, but with more housing just flooding the market, there becomes more choice, there becomes more options, and with that, rents go down. But even beyond just, you know, basic actual housing that's affordable for people, we need more supportive housing, specifically for youth. Because many of the kids that we see, just, you know, even if you were to provide them with their own place, they don't have the kind of the skills to live independently. You know, we think back to when we were 16, 17, 18 years old, you know, how many of us would have been able to go out and live on our own? So a big thing really is supportive housing for youth, where they kind of have that staff member or that person who's there to kind of teach them these skills before they're out completely on their own.
So one of the key things that I see when it comes to youth is, you know, in Kingston especially, the vacancy rate is so low, and there's challenges with Queen's students and with St. Lawrence College students, and that our youth are having a very difficult time to rent. And if you're not a student, then they don't want to rent to you. So even just better education in terms of landlords and things like that. So getting a documentary out like this and getting the word out that to different members of the community and landlords and things like that will hopefully, you know, break that stigma.
So Kingston has identified a housing first strategy in its 10-year plan as a solution to homelessness, but what does that mean for people who aren't chronically homeless?
Right. So, you know, Kingston has in their 10-year housing and homelessness plan identified housing first principles as being kind of the guiding force moving forward. And for youth, we don't see that as being the only, let alone best option for them. The Youth Homelessness Steering Committee that I sit on is in the draft stages of forming our own youth homelessness plan. And within that plan, we've identified that for some youth, housing first will be an effective strategy. But for most youth, and this is coming on having public forums where youth were able to provide a voice on the services that they felt they needed, they identified transitional housing, which runs counter to the housing first principles. And so through this draft version of this plan that we'll be putting out to deal specifically with youth homelessness, it recommends a mixture of transitional housing and housing first as being the most effective strategy to deal with youth homelessness.
People who are like myself, you know, through a marriage breakup, I ended up in a shelter with my four kids for 8 weeks or whatever. You need some legal resources. You need your cheerleaders, the people who are, you know, helping you out. And it takes less resources over the longer period of time to get those people housed, right? But in Kingston, we're not even including them. We're saying they can figure it out on their own. And so one of the things that they, down in Niagara, for example, and other communities that they're doing is transitional supportive housing. In cities like Vancouver, the city holds a number of apartments so they can rapidly house people and have supports in place for them, which would be, you know, whether you're dealing with the chronic street homeless or whether it's the, you know, the sort of the middle homeless people, getting people housed is the most important thing. And the other piece that's a little bit concerning for me in Kingston is that with the supports that are being advocated through the Housing First model, is that they don't have to access them. You know, you're doing supportive housing, but if they don't want the supports, they don't need to use them, and then how are you able to ensure that there's going to be a success? So for me, I think that there needs to be something more, something stronger in there in terms of the supportive piece, because when you have people on the street who've been homeless I can't remember the exact definition that they're saying, over 3 times in 2 years or whatever it happens to be, that it becomes a community. And the longer that somebody is homeless, the greater chance is that they're going to stay homeless. And then there's the health issues and everything else. So I think that there needs to be some focus on that middle group as well.
Do you think that Canada's housing strategy, public housing strategy, and social services surrounding relief to people who are suffering from homelessness needs to be completely reconceived? Or are cities like Vancouver doing it in a way that we can try and apply to other localities?
I think it's a bit of both. I mean, when they stopped building social housing in the 1990s, I mean, that was huge. I mean, people can't afford housing. That's plain and simple of it. I mean, the plain and simple is 30% of your gross income from all sources. So if you have a husband and wife working and whatever, and they're both working minimum wage, they're at risk of homelessness, right? Affordable housing in Kingston for somebody on Ontario Works or on disability or even minimum wage earners is ridiculous. Somebody who's on Ontario Works, I think that their shelter allowance is $370. You can't even rent a room in a shared accommodation for that amount of money. We have a lady here today who's ecstatic. She's been here since before Christmas, and she's ecstatic that she's been approved for an apartment at $670 a month, utilities included. But she's on ODSP, and that's about $200 more than what her shelter allowance is. So she's going to have to cut into other areas like food and medical and other basic necessities just so she can keep the roof over her head. So that's the primary thing, that contributing factor to homelessness in Kingston is lack of affordable housing. And I've said this many times, it's not what CMHC, Canadian Mortgage and Housing Corporation, considers to be affordable. It's what the lowest common denominator in terms of income levels can afford. That's what is the problem, is that there isn't enough affordable housing for low-income people in the community. And so the whole ideology of what homelessness is and what at-risk of homelessness is really, really skewed. People don't get it. People think that homelessness is the guy on the street who's panhandling, or the guy, the lady who's, you know, bunched up over a heating grate in Toronto. That is homelessness. But 4/5 of all other conditions of homelessness, we don't even see. The community of Niagara region is about 350,000 people. And if I compare that to the population of, well, the sign on Kingston says 117,000. And so if we include some of the bigger areas, like some of the suburb areas, I think it's around, 135,000? The municipality of Niagara only gets, well, the amount of money that it gets from the province for their provincial funding for homelessness is about the same as what Kingston gets, but they're serving a much larger population, and it's also a community of communities, so there's 12 different communities there. So with less resources to be able to impact change there, they didn't have the money to hire consultants, and they didn't have they didn't have the financial resources to do a lot of things. So they used a lot of their own internal resources. So they had people on committee from public health and from social services and, you know, like sort of more broader based. And through the consultation process, they also had town halls where in each of the 12 different communities, so people, like average Joes, could actually attend and participate and provide some feedback. They also did online questionnaires and advertised on Facebook and all of the rest of that. So they really made a concerted effort to engage people who were either homeless, people who with lived experience, or average Joe citizen, as well as having balancing that with, you know, people who are working in the industry, because it is an industry, and the different levels of bureaucracy. So it was more of a holistic approach, and it was more from a ground up, which is more about community building than top down, than what Kingston is. However, they've also, because they have fewer resources, they have to be a little bit more creative. So for down in Niagara, for example, where transitional supportive housing is considered an option, plan for and the consultant's plan for Kingston is that transitional supportive housing is not an option because it doesn't house people permanently. So there are some theoretical differences between those kinds of things, and we also see in Toronto and Vancouver and all kinds of larger municipalities where transitional housing is part of the housing continuum, and it isn't about being housing ready, it's about keeping a roof over people's heads, helping them to acquire some skill sets so they can maintain their own housing when housing becomes available. The wait lists in all throughout Canada for social housing is very, very long. The one thing that's really interesting here in Kingston is that they're really focusing on the highest needs So people with co-occurring mental health or physical health issues, and trying to get those supports in place. For what I have witnessed here is that for some of those chronically homeless people, they've been homeless for so long that getting into housing without 24/7 support isn't going to really work well for them. So there's a lot of, you know, differences on in philosophies and that sort of thing. So, which, you know, is ORCode is the consultant, and they've provided their report. I think that the city is doing a fair job at listening to the shelter managers and to people with, you know, their feet on the ground. But there's still, their primary focus is on the highest needs. But I don't think anywhere, and hopefully we will see a change in this, is being able to track how many services people who are homeless are actually using. So we can, without that information, you can't really say what the problem is, whether it's a mental health thing, whether it's a poverty thing. Without identifying the number of services and the depth of those services that people are using, homelessness is still just homelessness, right? One of the things that I'm really pumped about with the Kingston plan is the intention to have sort of a central intake system so that we can perhaps see the number of services that homeless persons are using, what kinds of services they are using. And without that information, you can't really say what the problem is, whether it's a mental health thing, whether it's a poverty thing. Without identifying the number of services and the depth of those services that people are using, homelessness is still just homelessness. Right? I don't want to choose black or blue. I don't want to see what they've done to you. I don't.
I don't want to see it at my windowsill. I don't want to see it.
Thank you for listening to Beyond Closed Doors, a special program made possible by the Robert H. Black Documentary Residency. My name is Brenna, and I'm a graduating politics student at Queen's University. I hope you enjoyed my conversations with Emily, a young woman experiencing homelessness, Jason Bobia of the Kingston Youth Shelter, Connie Schwartz of Ryandale Shelter, and Tara Everett of Home-Based Housing's Youth Services Division. I'll conclude this special program on youth and hidden homelessness in Kingston, Ontario, with a brief conversation Emily and I had about one of our favorite songs, and that's Combat Baby by Metric. What kind of music do you like?
What kind of music do I like? Oh my gosh.
You mentioned the radio, so I'm curious.
Radio. My favorite band ever is Nirvana. I listen to a lot of electronica. Like, not like dubstep and stuff like that. I like the more like housey, trancey stuff.
I don't know any, like, I'm such a like dork. My favorite band of all time is Broken Social Scene by far.
I don't really listen to Broken Social Scene a lot. I listen to a lot of Metric.
I think my all-time favorite Metric album is Old World Underground.
That's the best one. I agree with that completely.
Hands down.
Yeah.
Combat Baby, like...
That's one of my favorite songs,
We used to leave the blue lights on, and there was a beat. Ever since you have been gone, it's all caffeine-free, faux punk fatigue, said it all before. They try to kick it, their feet. Come
And with that, Beyond Closed Doors, an exploration of youth and hidden homelessness in Kingston, Ontario, the 2015 Homelessness Marathon draws to a close. This was a 15-hour radio broadcast produced by 14 stations from 6 provinces in Canada. I hope that you feel as listeners that we have achieved the purpose of the marathon, which is in its 13th year here in Canada. And that purpose is to create linkages between Canadian communities experiencing homelessness. Linkages meaning similarities and also differences, how municipalities treat folks who are homeless and what the solutions they bring to the table are. The purpose of the marathon is also to bring people's attention to the realities of homelessness, and we hope we've done that by raising up and prioritizing the voices of those who have experienced lack of community, homelessness, and poverty. If you caught part of this year's marathon but are interested in hearing more, you can visit www.cfrc.ca to listen to our programming archives and also visit the tab cfrc.ca/homelessness. CFRC would like to thank the Community Foundation of the Kingston area, as well as Martha's Table, for being a wonderful, wonderful host to our open mic. We would also like to thank the staff at St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church and the volunteers at the Kingston Street Mission and Sunday Special Meals at St. Andrew's, who made snacks, a warm space, washrooms, and an overnight venue possible for this year's marathon. Thank you to Kate, the chaplain of Queen's University, for organizing some very delicious soup at 10 p.m. and 2 a.m., and to Bev from Sunday Dinners at St. Andrew's for helping us out with some of the logistics. I'd like to thank all of the CFRC and community volunteers who came out for a very cold winter night and allowed the marathon to be a success. Thanks also to Ophira for coordinating a very special episode of Groundwire National Alternative News Show, which allowed smaller stations who were unable to contribute longer segments to the marathon to contribute and share the voices of their communities. That brought our total number of contributing stations up to 20. Finally, thank you to those of you in Kingston and across Canada who came out to open mics and roundtables, called in to request lines to share your stories with homelessness, community or lack of community, and poverty in Canada or elsewhere. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in to all or part of the marathon on your home station or online. If you have any questions about the content that you heard, if you'd like to perhaps get in touch with someone, you can visit cfrc.ca/homelessness and email me. My name is Brenna. You can email me at spokenword@cfrc.ca or give us a call here in Kingston, 613-533-2121.